So they've entered in with their e-commerce demand. And then on the side, they've been letting you as a publisher hack the system by basically doing direct TAM deals, where basically they drop their margins to near zero, and then you benefit greatly from it.
How do you acquire your first million users? Hello and welcome to Growth Masterminds. My name, of course, is John Kutzer. As you probably know, we're on a series, right? It's about starting up, getting a new app up and running, maybe reinvigorating an old one. Probably not, but maybe. It's taking it from the starting blocks to a pretty significant milestone. Not the end goal. It's the journey, not the destination, but it's your first million users. Today, we're chatting with somebody who's helped hundreds of app companies. He's got a successful app marketing podcast. He's smart. He's edgy. He's not afraid to call it like it is. His name is Felix Braberg of 2.5 Gamers. Welcome, Felix.
Thank you so much for having me. We've been trying to do this for a while.
Super pumped to have you. You've been working on this forever.
Yeah.
I think problem number one is we were using LinkedIn messages to communicate, and that is not, everybody knows, that's a disaster, right? You get 5 million of them a day. I might be exaggerating. Most of them are people, hey, biz dev, I have SEO.
I think the first tip to getting your million users, don't use LinkedIn messaging.
No, you'll get a lot of promises and not much delivery, but you'll probably pay a few people some things as well. How are you? You are doing amazing things at 2.5 Gamers. You are consulting with lots of people. How are things going in your life?
Ooh, it's ad monetization consulting, right? So it's up one day and down the other, right? So yeah, one thing about ad monetization, it's very much tied to both micro and macroeconomic cycles, right? So what I do is very much tied to how good I look, is also a function of how close to Christmas we are. The closer we are to Christmas, the better the work I do like makes me look. The further away from Christmas, the worse it looks.
Okay. How well you can do is based on how good you look. I mean, I guess that's the facelift there. That's the shower in the background. I don't know the guy by the tree there. Excellent. I know you're talking about results, obviously. How's it been recently? What's been happening in AdMon recently that has you interested, has you confused, has you what? What's going on?
So this last year, out of all the years I've been working in ad monetization, I would say is the year where we've seen the most amount of changes. So ad monetization is always about finding the little hacks that no one talks about, that maybe 200 people in the world know about, utilizing that hack, and that hack usually ends up making you a lot of money. Up until recently, the most profitable hack has been to utilize Google Ad Manager resellers and competing them against AdMob and Google Bidding. This kind of ad monetization hack closes in about 30 days. That has been, I think, majority of studios that I work with are mainly monetizing on ad monetization. They're not very happy about this. And then you slap on the fact also that Google's making you do a CMP update, otherwise they won't bid on any European users, has resulted in the fact that this year kind of the network that at least ad monetizing games and apps are most annoyed with is Google, because they're making them do the most amount of work. But that's not the end. Then you also have this superimposed with a big entrance into the mobile gaming space, and that is APS, Amazon Publisher Services, that have entered into the market in a very Amazon way. Basically, they've gone gung-ho and saying, yeah, your margin is my opportunity. So they've entered in with their e-commerce demand. And then on the side, they've been letting you as a publisher hack the system by basically doing direct TAM deals, where basically they drop their margins to near zero, and then you benefit greatly from that. So it's just, that's like a lot of changes that's happened in a very short amount of time. And that's maybe half of the changes that's happened since January. And usually that would be maybe 3 or 4 years worth of changes, but it's all happened within the last 7 months. So a lot of things.
It seems like everything is that scenario, right? Everything has accelerated. Everything is just happening so quickly right now. Let's go back to the first one that you mentioned, the arbitrage thing that you talked about with Google. I mean, I understand being pissed off that that's closing, but I mean, come on. Does anybody think that that was going to continue forever?
I don't know, but like the fact is that there's a lot of studios, right, that run the kind of the CPI LTV like calculus and kind of do that arbitrage between getting users. And, you know, if you right now, if you stop doing that GAM, getting that GAM hack, usually what you'd say is like maybe you're losing between 8 to 18% on an ad opt out basis, is what I'm seeing when I'm running these tests on switching it off. I mean, if you're running a mobile gaming studio and acquiring millions of users, you know, that 18% is really going to hurt you, right? So by all means, you're angry with the status quo, but there's not that much you can do about it because Google's very large. And no matter how big you are as a gaming company, there is no company or gaming company that's bigger than Google.
Yes, yes. So this suggests, by the way, that in a month, a tsunami is hitting. And there's going to be some real challenges for casual, hyper-casual. There's going to be some real challenges for anybody else in AdMon. And they're looking hard for a new hack.
They're already out there. Like one, when one door like closes, another one opens. Like there's like this industry is so fascinating because there's so many small little things you can do, and there's always people looking for an edge. That there's already things that have popped up that are looking extremely promising. On the last 2.5 Gamers podcast, I was mentioning that we've had tremendous success with some of my clients with directly integrating Moloco. Moloco has been this DSP that's blasted on to the scene. It's like I spoke with them at Gamescom and they keep saying it's a 10-year overnight success. They've been slowly humming along. And right now I'm hearing like some rumors that's on ALX and on Iron Source Exchange and Digital Termite Exchange. Sometimes in some geos, Moloco is like 45% of DSP revenue that you're getting. So usually a DSP, like when it gets that large, it makes sense for them to go direct because then they can cut out the middleman. So what I've seen lately is that if you go direct and if you have some kind of volume, usually you're able to get a 8 to 11% uplift on AdArpDAO by going directly to Moloco. And that's like a hack didn't exist because they didn't have an SDK a year ago. So that's like a new door that's open. It's not really a hack. It's just trying new things.
It's cool. I recently interviewed somebody from Moloco. They're doing pretty cool stuff, pretty amazing stuff. They rank really well in the Singular ROI Index, the most recent one. They're heavy on AI, heavy on artificial intelligence to try and learn really, really quickly, apply that. So that is cool. Let's go back to the APS thing that you're talking about. What are you seeing there? Do you think that's a land grab that'll go away as well? How long do you think that'll last?
So if we look in mobile, like in terms of share of revenue overall ads in America, that's what matters, right? So 2 years ago, they were sub 10%. Now they're about like 17% in America of overall impressions, which is quite impressive. That's happened in a very short amount of time, but it's only banners that they're really strong on. Right now, they've only conquered banners. And they're only good at banners right now because of the one fact is that on video inventory, they don't have any adjustable end cards. So you physically actually can't have an end card where you have to click out of it. It just kind of ends. So they're playing competition with like the big boys on mobile that all have these aggressive end cards that sometimes, you know, you have click-through rates of 80% and they can't even compete with that. So they're always going to be at a disadvantage until they change that, which won't be until Q4 this year.
And the other thing that I'm thinking is if they apply a generative AI solution to creating video ads for products that are for sale, that could be super, super interesting.
Yeah, they're also kind of cutting off the overall demand because they're only letting on certain amount of types of publishers right now to monetize with theirs. So it's kind of like the most, it's like the VIP club of ad monetization right now. They're not letting in everyone. They're just letting in like, the publishers that they think has the biggest overlap with the Amazon ID, which tends to be women over 45, I think they're looking for. So yeah, Social Casino and Match 3, they get like entrance straight away because that's usually the like the kind of segment that like is tailored to.
Come on, where's the first person shooter Amazon?
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Okay, so that is some cool new stuff that's happening. Some doors are opening, some doors are closing, and I guess you better build an app that is for women over 40. Let's talk about your first million users. Clearly, as you have, you've got your Amazon, your AdMon hat firmly screwed on. That is you. That's what you do. We focus on, you're an expert. That's where you go there. So if you're looking at apps that are looking for their first million users, what are the pathways that you're seeing right now?
So purely speaking from an ad monetization perspective, like AdMon is kind of the hack in mobile. So majority of the things we do on mobile, like most of the users that we acquire, they don't actually add to the bottom line. Like in mobile gaming, you're very lucky. Like a Supercell game, if they're getting 1.5 to 2% of convert, like a user's converting to an IAP, that's considered amazing. You'd be shutting that off the mountaintops, right? But that still means you don't convert or actually like get any value from the 98% of users that you pay for most likely to get into your app or into your game. So what ad monetization is, it's a way to earn some sort of revenue from that user base. Actually, like the biggest growth in my consulting segment that I've seen in the last year has actually been from mobile companies looking at subscription-based mobile companies looking to actually diversify their income away from subscriptions. And the way of doing that is basically rebuilding or tailoring their app with mobile ads. I think there's been some really cool companies like Duolingo that have really led the charge on this, or Redecor, that have some really good ad placements. And a lot of subscription-based ads are looking at this and taking notice because, I think, what is it that we estimated? Duolingo is probably one of the biggest mobile app publishers out there. I think we estimated they're probably making anywhere between 50 to 80 grand a day currently on ads, which would put them as a really big mid-sized gaming company in terms of ad revenue. And I don't think that would even be possible 3-4 years ago. So I guess the Overton window is shifting, if you say it like that. And basically what was not okay to talk about 4 years ago in terms of ad monetization is now very relevant.
How the wheels turn.
Yeah.
How the wheels turn, hey, because a year ago, 2 years ago, 6 months ago, in a lot of cases, big thing is subscription, subscription, subscription. Everybody wants subscription. Everybody needs subscription. And you're over-indexing on that. Well, guess what? Hey, nobody wants to have like 10, 20, or 40 tiny little holes in their bank account dripping out money every single month. So there's a limit to the number of subscriptions that you're going to have. Streaming is taking a lot of those as well at a high value. Also, Apple One is taking a lot of that at a high dollar value every single month. So on the iOS side, at least. And guess what? The economy, not so great, not so great, not so amazing. Lots of inflation. People are thinking, hey, the money I made last year is this year. So that makes a ton of sense. But wow, 50 to 80K a day, that's hard to say no to.
I mean, the key to making a lot of money on in terms of ad monetization is that you need to have a robust in-app economy or in-game economy and a lot of users. If you have those two things, like something of value that you can give away for 30-second rewarded ad, then you're going to get a lot of impressions. And right now, those impressions are still worth quite a lot of money. So yeah, it's a good way of kind of, helping the leaky bucket leak less.
Talk about an app, maybe it's like a Duolingo, maybe it's another one that is monetizing subscribed users at, let's say, $10 to $15 a month. Subscription is 10, 15 bucks a month, maybe $100, $150 a year, whatever the case might be. And they say, hey, you know what? We want to go admon because we want to capture the segment that's never going to do that, never going to buy in. What do you think the equivalent level of monetization is between the subscribed user and the admon user?
So if I'm understanding the question correctly, like how would I implement the ads, or what would you think is the best balance?
Where am I making more money?
Ah.
Am I making more money from the person who's actually on the subscription or the person who's watching the ads?
Always you will make more money per user basis on the subscription, right? But that also has the Apple and Google tax, right? And the beautiful thing about ad monetization is you don't have that tax. So it's untaxed money.
Untaxed money. Yeah. This is awesome. It's almost like being an employee of the UN.
Except it's ads, so not really.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow. So let's talk a little organic, because we know that the primary vector, especially for games, for growth, and pretty much everybody else, when you want to go big, you're buying a lot of ads, you're acquiring a lot of users. You're doing a lot of that arbitrage, the LTV, your cost of acquisition, all that stuff. Have you seen anybody lately who has had a major organic success?
There's been a couple of successful cases in Europe in the last year. I do work with the one I'm thinking about, so I'm not sure I can give them a shout out.
Why not?
Yeah, I don't know if they feel comfortable with it, and you know, like, it's better always to err on the safe side. But like, you know, I think on the gaming side, there's like one that's the biggest one that grew quite quickly. They're a casual studio, and they had immense success when most gaming studios like decreased last year or did not like grow. But also, kind of some of the hybrid casual, hyper casual studios that are shifting right now to hybrid casual. Have had really good success. I would say probably the most interesting thing I've seen is Dreamdale. And I probably think that's the best game to look at if you're looking at a true shift from hyper-casual to hybrid-casual. That's probably one of the games I'd highlight.
What are some of the things that you saw from this customer you cannot name that you can draw out as learnings? How did this organic success happen?
A real big focus on design and ease of use, and also like an undying focus on growth and saying no to ad networks and going their own way. So some people get really influenced by their ad partners or UA partners. These guys don't. They pave their own way and they don't take no for an answer. And if they get a no, they're strong-willed enough to not let it phase them. And when you can couple that with like unparalleled success, I find that that's in our industry, you're usually able to bend any company or anything to your way, which usually is very beneficial for the company. Because I think one of the unspoken rules, at least in ad monetization, is that there's rules for everyone in our industry, but the unwritten rule is that like scale negates all other rules. So the rule for ad monetization is if you're one of the top 10 publishers in the world, you're not going to get treated the same as if you're making $500 a day. AppLovin, Iron Source, Unity, they're all going to like treat you very differently, and you can write your own rules. If something is against the terms and conditions for the little guy, the big guy, like doesn't matter. Like they can, they can dictate their own terms. So in our kind of industry, like once you hit scale and if you're growing towards a trajectory of large scale, you have a lot, you can be a lot more flexible with the law, so to speak. Of course, not the law, what but the terms and conditions set up. But yeah,
what kind of laws are you breaking?
That's like, it's like, what can you say? Like some networks are able to do growth deals. That was more popular like before kind of the economy turned around, where essentially you could get cashbacks based on your year, like your monthly earnings. Meta used to do this beautiful thing that if you were growing, you used to be able to get a certain percentage of your growth just back in cash. Sometimes that could mean, you know, I had some clients back in the day were earning like $100,000 to $250,000 a quarter in just pure cash bonus. And if you didn't know that existed and didn't ask for it, you never got it. So it's like those unwritten rules. Like if you're growing, like all companies love you.
Absolutely. Success has 1,000 fathers, failure is an orphan, right?
Yeah.
You just mentioned the shift from hyper casual to hybrid casual. Talk about what's changing in that shift.
So I think it was a couple of pocket gamers ago, a astute gentleman from Voodoo came out and said that hyper casual is dead. I believe it was a bit of a marketing push and everyone took notice and everyone's talking about it. And that kind of was a starting gun that most people or most hyper casual studios started shifting to hybrid casual. That is to say, some portion of your earnings was coming from IAPs instead of zero. I don't personally believe that hyper-casual is dead, because if you look at the top charts, it's still a lot of hyper-casual games that are coming up there. So I don't think it's a dead genre, and I don't think it will completely die. I do think it's a clever thing to diversify your income stream away from ads, because the thing about ads is it's also very much tied to the overall health of the economy. And the US economy is a big driving force here. So in our little ecosystem, usually what happens is that the majority of like the highest ECPM ads are other mobile games. But what also pushes up the average like ECPMs is also branding inventory. And since May last year, branding inventory has just kind of fallen through the floor. There's no fast moving consumer good ads. There's nothing like no one advertising cars. And that's a direct function, basically, because you as consumers aren't spending as much money on products as they were 2 years ago. So as a result, my ECPMs are lower than they were 2 years ago.
Yeah. I would just like to highlight the AdMon consultant just said about 3 minutes ago that you have to diversify beyond ad monetization.
Yeah, I mean, it's just good business sense, right? Like if you're completely tied, like I would give that like advice to anyone, right? Like if you're completely reliant on one source of revenue, that's not safe.
It's not safe. Absolutely. You're hopefully APS is coming in and injecting something that the brand is dropping off on. So that's good news, at least in a sense. As you see this shift, what do you think it does to the longevity of an app, the longevity of a game? We've seen this sort of turn and burn with hyper casual, right? Where, you know, just burn through multiple apps. Do you think this hybrid shift means that there's a little more longevity in an app?
Should be on paper, right? Like I've been a part doing some ad monetization for some hyper casual games. And I can tell you, like, some of the half-lives on these games is like 10 days and they earn back, you know, the full production costs in like 4 days. And then, you know, you've burned through all the users in the world that will level download your game in 18 days. And then you're like, okay, let's move on to the next project. So I think those days are numbered, and it would make sense that some of these hybrid casual games will have a bit more depth and a bit more like longer half-life. But hyper casual is not dead, so it still will be around for some time.
It makes me think of generative AI, because you can use generative AI. People, I know several people who said, I created an app with generative AI. And I think that that's a bit of a an overstatement. I think there's pieces that you need to do, but yeah, it can help. And there's going to be increased and better and a more amazing generative AI in the future. I mean, you're going to be able to prompt an app at some point, right? And you're going to be able to prompt a game. That sounds pretty cool. But the downside is, how much crap will the App Store and Google Play be loaded with?
I think we'll still get these beautiful, like Cinderella, almost like stories, because basically mobile development is full of apps and mobile games that are just these absolute success stories that maybe is one person or just a dev team that have worked on and kind of threw away. And then suddenly the app is making millions of dollars a month. And they don't really know what's going on. I think the most recent case I've heard of a multi-million dollar outcome was by a man named Steven in America, who made the Wordle app. And then it got really famous because of New York Times. And then it got multiple app downloads and was eventually purchased by, I think, Lion Studios for an undisclosed amount of money. And, you know, this guy made this app in 2 weeks, wasn't doing anything about it for 2-3 years, and suddenly it had millions of downloads and AppLovin bought it. It's just hilarious. Like, these things happen in our ecosystem.
And everybody who has an app that's been languishing forever goes like, there's hope. There's hope. That's my retirement plan.
There's also like a large amount of luck and success in our industry. Like, I don't know how big a portion is. I don't know if it's 20% or 30%, but luck is also a factor.
We actually talked in the beginning about the butterfly effect.
Yeah.
And I brought up overdetermination. And of course, the butterfly effect is some tiny thing happens and some immense thing happens that's actually directly causally related to that. Later in time. Absolutely cool. And overdetermination is everything has multiple causes, right? Everything is. I truly believe that overdetermination plays a role in this luck. It is absolutely luck. You can do everything right and fail. You can do almost everything wrong and succeed. And yet the more things you do right, the more luck you tend to have. So I do think, I almost think luck is required.
Yeah.
Necessary but insufficient, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, one of the first panels I was ever on, it was on with this guy who just like in 2013 made like one of the first flashlights apps on one of the first iPhones. And then when MoPub came out, which was the first mediation, he started making, you know, like 60-70k a day in ads. And he was on this panel and he's getting these questions, and after the panel he's like, I don't know, I just made a flashlight app, like and then he sold it.
Nothing is more common than somebody who trips into success and then everybody looks, what did he do? How can we follow that? What did she do? You know, what can we learn from her success? And, you know, it's like, I'm glad he was honest afterwards.
Yeah, he was like, super honest. Just like, he was like, yeah, you guys all seem really clever and talking about LTV. I just made a flashlight app in 2012. There were no apps on the App Store.
Felix, where is our time machine?
Yeah, exactly.
Where is our time machine? Holy cow, we need that. Okay, cool. I want to talk about some of the most common vectors to success and get your take on that, because If I look at apps that absolutely grow and do amazing, I see most of them have one or multiple kind of main vectors to success, right? In some cases, it's IP. You've got some great intellectual property, Pokemon Go, or whatever it might be, something like that, that just has huge cachet and people jump on it. Another is tons of dollars and you just spend on UA and eventually, hey, it goes and the
Monopoly Go rolling down.
Exactly. Cultural relevance. Something just happens and maybe the luck comes in there. It's the right app at the right time. It's related to a major event and boom, it goes. I almost wonder if Flappy Bird is there, you know, that kind of invented itself. Wordle maybe is there. Sometimes it's dogged determination. You just keep pushing, and you're eventually something lets loose and it gets successful. What do you see? Any other vectors?
So what I've seen is like undetermined focus just on data from a very early stage. So mobile game development or app development, dev teams that focus purely on data tend to do better than ones who do not. So that is to say, like from very early days, they don't look at eCPM or ad ARPDA from an ad perspective. They just look at impressions per DAU and overall ad viewer rate. And then they, until they get to a certain threshold that they know will add a certain LTV to the game, they don't bring in more users. They don't waste any money on UA. Same thing for IAPs or subscriptions. They work on tweaking these little small metrics until it gets to, and then they bring in maybe 500 to 1,000 users. And then, yeah, they work on that until they actually get all the metrics right. And then they hit the scale button when they get there. And also before they even have a prototype, how they actually do prototyping is they do UA, fake UA on different concepts that they're trying out. So instead of saying, I think people will like a board game set in medieval Europe, they actually make fake video creatives on the board game of medieval Europe. Spend $1,000 on the different creatives that look a bit different and see how many signups they get on a fake posting, essentially. Mm-hmm. That doesn't exist. And that's using data to drive app developments where UA takes a center like stage. Because at the end of the day, like ad monetization is great, but UA is probably the most important discipline right now. And it's taken a bit away from design, I would say. And UA is just becoming more and more prevalent and more important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Super, super interesting. Cool. Well, we got to bring this to an end. It's getting late for you. I want to thank you for taking this time. I'm looking at your success with 2.5 gamers. You guys are doing amazing. And more power to you.
Thank you.